Welcome to the Boneyard with Steve Robertson. As always, I am your good friend and host, Steve Robertson, here on the Hump Day edition of Yard. It's been a day, right? It's been one of those days, like, there's so many things, like, in the dad job description they don't tell you about. You know, and then you got to, like, handle stuff. You got to go be daddy, you know. And today was one of those days. Not anything major. I mean, a little bit expensive. I mean, you have to spend money you don't want to spend. But such is life. You know, when you birth children and you raise children, you're somewhat responsible for them until they are responsible for themselves. But, we had a situation where we didn't get a renewal notice for a license plate in the mail. And who knows the way the Postal Service works right here. Maybe they sent it and maybe it ended up in Memphis or Osceola, Missouri or El Segundo, California. I don't know. I don't know what happens down at the post office. I don't. It's frustrating. I got a package. It was shipped out on the 7th from Texas. And it's so interesting. You know, this is like on top of everything else. It's so interesting how that works because it's so stupid, man. It's this is not like a new thing. Right, I mean, you guys deal with some of the same problems I do. I mean, it's not something that, it's a part of, it's unique to me. But package leaves Texas, goes to Shreveport, finds its way to the Starkville post office yesterday morning. And so you'd think, okay, well, it'll be here today. No, not here today. Nope, they shipped it down to Macomb. I don't know why. I mean, I live in Starkville. It's at my neighborhood post office. If they didn't want to bring it to me, they could have just, like, called me, and I'll go get it, you know. But no, it got to go on vacation, and I hope my package had a chance to get some wards while I was down there. Maybe it'll bring some back with it. But who knows if it's going to be in Starkville tomorrow? Who knows? You know, could be in Montana. You know, I've had packages sometimes that never get to me, ever. And so that's like on top of everything else. But anyway, you know, it's just living life on life terms, man. But it gave me a chance to go to lunch with my youngest son, and kind of catch up with him. Because you know how it is. I mean, it's like when you, in the fam chat, there's always some certain things you talk about. And you can go sit across the table and, you know, wait for your food and just have a chance to just kind of sit and visit and catch up. And talk about life, you know, and talk about the difference between price and cost, right? The price to renew a tag and then the cost to have to do it after you pay a ticket, you know. So the dad paid for. So I share that with you all because it's so incredibly important. And what's interesting, too, you know, just kind of like living life on life's terms, is like you're reminded so much that we are really at the mercy of the machine, right? There's only so much we can do, and we can get mad and rant, rave, and, you know, fire off a pithy email. But when I look back at the day, man, I got a lot of things done. I'm later recording the show that I wanted to be because we had media availability in the evening. And I sat down and I was like, I'm going to start the show. And I was like, no, I'm going to wait and kind of see what happens. So you're a little bit later getting your show. So many of you will be enjoying this on Thursday. But I got to get back on schedule. And that's the thing, too, like with football. You know, once school starts, we have a very regular schedule for media availability. And again, as I shared, you know, we're going to have 5 media opportunities this week. That's great, right? And so we try to get today's news done today. So like all 3 of the players that spoke to us this evening, those stories were up on Gene's page within like an hour of us getting home. Live with video too, so you can watch the video or you can go read the article, the transcript. It's up to you. You know, we don't tell you how to consume your news. We just provide it for you free of charge when it comes to that big room stuff. So, but I share that because Thursday is an off day. That's the NCAA mandated off day. You have to take 1 a week. Mississippi State elected to do it on Thursday, so we won't have any media availability on Thursday. We will have some on Friday. And we'll get into the weekend, and we got some more. And we'll get a chance to talk to Levy after the first in-stadium scrimmage. And it's like, today it really kind of hit me how close we are to football season. You know, we already got like 6 or 7 practices under our belts. The pads are on, you know. And so we're starting to play a little football out there. And we'll get a chance to observe some practice on Friday morning again for the second time this week. And that's great. It gives us a chance to get more art. Gives us a chance to get more observation. And to share that information with you. It's incredibly important. So, yeah, it's been a busy day. But, you know, every day above ground is a good day. It is. In some respects, right? I mean, it sure beats the alternative. We want to stay on this side of the grass as long as we possibly can. Not to say there's not something great waiting for most of us on the other side. But I love life, and I love my family, and I love what we do and who I do it for. And, you know, again, reminder, 60% off the annual subscription price at Jeans Page throughout the month of August. So be sure and come check that out. Bulldog Burger Company, longtime sponsors of this show. Man, I love them. Love them. And, of course, my youngest, Ian, works for Bulldog Burger Company and will for the next 3 semesters. And then he'll go off to graduate school. I guess maybe he'll take a gap semester before he goes off to graduate school. So maybe he ends up working for there for, you know, a couple more years. But I can tell you, he has had a great experience during his time there at Bulldog Burger Company. And as I shared with you guys the other day, we tried those pulled pork nachos, and they're great. And I'm kind of a pulled pork nacho expert. These are really good. And I don't know what sauce they use. It's like, it's not real smoky. It's not real sweet, but it kind of scratches you where you itch, right? So, you know, maybe if your beauty care regimen is on point, as the kids say, maybe skip the spring rolls this time and get those pulled pork nachos. And if you can't risk it, get them both, right? And those smash burgers, still loving those. And I have decided on my next visit to Bulldog Burger Company, whether we get it to go or we eat there, I'm going to get the triple smash. I'm going to do it. I know some of you are scared of that hamburger, and I get it. Don't be afraid of the dark. But we're going to give it a shot. And I'm committed. I'm going to knock it out. I don't care like if I had to eat a little later in the day. But I'm going to knock that thing out, and I'm going to come back and give you a full report. I've had the other 2 smash burgers, and they're great. Great. I prefer just like the regular smash burger. And again, the Brad loves that black label. My friend Jeff Murrah. He is my friend, texted me the other day and said, hey, I agree with your lovely bride. I like the black label smash a little bit better. And you know what? Different strokes for different smokes. That's why they make chocolate ice cream and vanilla, right? So we can all be satisfied with something. Find your own favorites at one of their 3 great locations, University Drive in Stark Vegas, Gloucester Street there in Tupelo, Lake Harbor Drive in the Ridge and Flowood area. Have the spring rolls and perhaps the pulled pork nachos. Is your appetizer. They'll make you better looking and certainly will get you rolling and get you filled up and get you nourished. And we don't just eat for nourishment. We eat for enjoyment. And I always enjoy a meal from Bulldog Burger Company, the place where people go to meet, M-E-A-T. All right. We spoke at length about the Bulldog offense, which I'm really optimistic about. But I might even feel better about the defense. Now, to be fair, the defense has farther to come, right? Because offensively, we did some good things last year. Not enough, but we did some good things. I mean, you know, scored over 30 points a game. And so, again, I think just some modest improvement on offense is going to be kind of paving the way to victory. But you and I both know this season is going to be ultimately judged on what the improvement we make on defense. And it's interesting talking to Isaac Smith tonight. He says, you know, Coach Arnett's been some other places and brought some new wisdom back. And that's the thing, too, that I think maybe he's discounted a little bit, too. You know, he's been out there and kind of seen some other things and kind of seen how people attack him. And, of course, the last couple of years, you know, he hadn't been calling the defense. You know, he's been scouting the defense, kind of charting the defense, and then kind of learning some other, you know, pressures and things like that. And people forget, you know, he was the first time DC when he came here. So like all of us, he is still learning. So I want to start with the secondary. And I mentioned some of this on Bo Bounds' show. So here's my personal opinion, okay? Because I am a Jerron Manning fan. I am still not optimistic we get him back. I think we can. And, of course, it's going to be probably the weekend or the first of the week before we know. But, guys, I'm going to be honest with you. You know, Jerron's not the biggest guy. Plays big, plays hard. But, obviously, you don't go bring in Kendall Dolby and Jordan Gilbert if Manning's coming back. But I think Jerron, you know, and granted, he still played some football this year, right? He went to minicamp with the Falcons and then played with the Orlando Pirates of the IFL. And, yes, it's indoor football. I get it. But, you know, it's not like he's just been sitting around eating, you know, Fig Newtons on the couch watching Netflix. And so I don't think it will take him that long to ramp up. But I think it's safe to say that he would probably come start as a two-deeper, right? When you've got guys that are SEC-caliber athletes that have had the benefit of spring practice and an SEC summer, it's tough to make up that gap. And so, again, I think expectations for both of these guys should be tempered. But I like where we are at safety. And, of course, Isaac Smith is that hybrid guy, you know, that can play in the box with the backers, kind of like the Bulldog, kind of like I interviewed Sean Preston the other day, kind of like what Sean played. And so he's a safety that's kind of a rover we can move around as needed to create, you know, some pressure. And so this safety group, when you start filling this thing out, you know, because it's an interesting dynamic, you know, the 3-3-5 on paper is not really a base defense because you can move so many people around. You can put an extra D lineman in. You can put an edge in. You can put a safety in. Whatever. And there's a lot you can do. You can slide another backer in. There's a lot of versatility within this defense. But this safety group, you know, Kendall Dolby was a guy that's highly recruited and had some injuries in his career, but also had some productivity, having a good camp. JG, Jordan Gilbert, highly recruited guy, went to A&M. Transferred to LSU. Now he's here. This is a guy that's got NFL potential. Roaming around your secondary. And then you throw Isaac Smith in, kind of that hybrid. And you throw in Marcus, too. You know, that's one thing, transferring in from Rice, and Isaac kind of mentioned him, too, as a guy that's very consistent. JG said the same thing. He's a guy that's very, very consistent. Have a very mature approach to football. And you love that, right? And so when you think about, like, the safety group from last year, it was good. Wasn't great, it was good. This group has the potential to be great. And then adding Manning in on top of that, if we're able to, is a bonus. We're going to be good at safety no matter what happens with Jerron Manning. Now, some of you, of course, you've seen Jerron Manning play in maroon and white. And so you're like, hey, if I can get that guy back, you know, even if I have to trade out a back of the roster guy for him, that's a win for Mississippi State. And you know what? You're absolutely right. Even if he doesn't start, right? And I don't expect him to. But, you know, by the end of the year, maybe he kind of works his way back into that. But you got to be patient with him. The corner room, we've talked about this extensively. This corner room looks like what you expect to see in the Southeastern Conference. Now, the days of the squat corner, and some of you need a definition, and I'm happy to provide that. The days of the squat corner, you know, the quick, but you know, maybe more quick than fast guy that, you know, plays off and then just kind of squats on the route, lets a guy catch underneath the brakes on the route, a guy that maybe can't run and defend the fade. You know, there used to be a lot of squat corners. You know, I go back and think about that great Meridian team that won the state championship. Like Kahari Usher that played for Meridian was a great squat corner. Great. But as receivers have developed, you know, used to everybody would take that long extended X receiver and turn him into a tight end back in old school football, you know, way back in the 2000s, right? When you've got to go out there and defend these 6'4", 6'5", you know, very rangy receivers with the a great catch radius. It's football is back, and thank goodness for that. My friends over at Prospects bringing out their best offer to date. New users who sign up will get $150 in lineups. That's if you win your first $5 lineup. It's pretty simple. If you win your first $5 lineup, you get $150 in lineups. And now, PrizePicks is available nationwide. So what you waiting for? Lock in for kickoff because everyone and everything is on PrizePicks. So what are you guys excited about this football season? I think the Steelers are going to be better than many people expect. I'm all over that aspect of it. I think that Steelers defense is going to kind of return to form. I think Pittsburgh is going to make a run at this thing in the AFC North. Maybe you see things a little bit differently, but you need to get in the game and get some skin in the game with me on PrizePicks. Now, PrizePicks is going crazy with the deals to start football season. They're just as excited as you and I are. They're giving you this new promo every day during a very stacked September. Make sure to sign up now for guaranteed picks every Sunday, along with profit boosts and daily discounts throughout the entire month. Plus, the app is very simple to use, and it's very user-friendly. You just pick 2 to 6 players and then pick more or less on their projected stats like pass yards, rush yards, fantasy score. It's the best way to get more locked in on game day. You can make all the picks you want across any sport, all in the very same app. Download the app today and use code BONEYARD to get $150 instantly in lineups if you win your first $5 lineup. PrizePicks. Run your game. This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Hey, if you could wake up tomorrow and just be better at one thing, what would it be? You know, maybe it's less doom scrolling. Maybe it's more time with your family. Maybe it's making more time for the things that bring enjoyment. You know, I'm a bit of a workaholic, to be quite honest with you. You know, I could schedule some time to do some things away from the office. And I think all of that helps me. I enjoy my work, but sometimes it's just simply good to get away. You know, better is a feeling, and it's really defined by you. And for BetterHelp, it's a BetterHelp therapist who really gets you. It's a focus on global emotional well-being with thousands of therapists and millions of members in over 100 countries. Well, it's progress. You know, and maybe it's getting better at making more time for yourself to do the things that you love. Sign up today and get 10% off at BetterHelp.com. That's Better, H-E-L-P.com. It's tough to do it with a 5'10 corner. And if you go back and look at the Egg Bowl, and no offense meant to anybody, but Lane Kiffin kind of figured out, you know what, maybe we shouldn't attack the Kelly Jones side. Let's go with the shorter guy, right? Let's put one of our big receivers and see if we can't get matched up on the shorter corner, and we'll just throw the fade. And you know what? They did. And we couldn't stop it. Well, now you've got a personnel group where a lot of people look like Kelly Jones. We don't know if they can play like Kelly Jones, and certainly I doubt they can run like Kelly Jones, but they have a much better catch radius. They're guys, too, that's going to be difficult to throw the fade against because of that catch radius and because of their foot speed. But what's interesting to me is one of the guys that we're hearing the most about, kind of on and off the media session chatter, is Jet Jefferson. You know, and that was the guy, too. I remember when we signed him, you know, some people were like, he's just a roster filler. And I can tell you, from the moment that he got here, there were some people saying, you know what, this kid's going to be able to help us. This guy's, he's going to be able to help us, Steve. And had he not been injured, he would have been, you know, your day one corner starting opposite Kelly Jones. But instead, against Southern Miss, he's out there pushing his leg around on a cart. Ended up redshirting last year and got plenty of eligibility left, right? But I continue to hear, like, a lot of people thought, well, we'll just bring in Jamrock and we'll bring in Khalib and these guys and we'll recruit over Jet. Well, Jet's not having it. And so we've got great competition at that other corner spot. And, of course, you know, Kelly can't play every snap. But the fact that we have 4 to 5 guys that we feel like can go out there and make plays for us, that's a great thing. We didn't have that last year. Matter of fact, we haven't had that in a while, probably back to maybe the Emmanuel Forbes senior year? Maybe? Oh, it's last year here? I think maybe that's the case. I mean, we've had some good corners. You know, you had DeCam, and obviously Bryce Pollock was here for a while. You know, we've had some guys that can play some corner. But this is probably the best-looking group of corners that we've had, bar none, in the Jeff Lebby era, Mississippi State. And again, give Corey Bell some credit. Get to the linebackers. I think this is the strength of the defense. And I kind of mentioned that to Sam West tonight, too. I mean, it's kind of a benefit, right? I mean, if you're Sam West and you're getting to practice against this very athletic linebacker core day in and day out, it's going to get you better, ready for the season. You know, and what's interesting about the linebacker group, everybody now say, we know what Tyler Lockhart can do. And I'll tell you this, too. We talk about our issues at edge. Sometimes don't be surprised if Tyler Lockhart's not lining up out there at seven technique chasing the quarterback on third and long. Just called that maybe an educated guess. But the one linebacker, like talking to the other backers, the name that consistently gets mentioned to me is Fat Clark. I always thought, who's going to surprise me this year? Fat Clark. And if you look at Fat, he looks great. I joked at it with him. I saw him this summer when he came to camp. I was like, I'm going to start calling you not so Fat Clark. He looks great. And a guy that can play some Mike. And I think, you know, Fat got here, and I don't mean this in the derogatory way, but he got here, he was a little beefy, right? And he was more of a tackle-to-tackle backer. Well, now that he's trimmed up, he's a lot quicker. He's more to that sideline-to-sideline backer. And with all this bubble and underneath screen and stuff, you better have backers that can cover territory. So while Tyler Lockhart and Jaylen Smith and some of those guys, you know, Gillette, they're going to make names for themselves this year, don't sleep on Fat Clark. Now, the defensive line, while we have some pieces there, that's probably maybe where my biggest concern is on the defense. And again, you say, well, Steve, you know, your biggest concern on offense was the offense. I feel better about the offensive line than I have in the last couple of years. But, yeah, I mean, I think, you know, we've spent the money. We've allocated the roster spots to be better in the trenches. But I think the defensive line, you know, obviously you've got some guys that have played some ball and you got some guys that have some potential and you got some guys that were highly recruited out of high school. But one of the things that I like to see and like to hear are guys that have really embraced the weight room and the strength and conditioning program and the nutrition plan, like Diesel Moy. You know, we signed that guy, and people are like, I cannot believe we're signing this guy. And I said, hey, he'll have a role, you know, and he did. He came in on third and fourth and short, and he was good. And that's about all he could do for us. Well, now he's dropped. He's down from like 360 to like 330. He looks like a different player. And because he looks like a different player, he plays like a different player. So he's the guy that can give you more snaps. And with his size and his wingspan, he's the guy that can kind of create a mess in the middle and then give those very athletic linebackers we have a chance to go make plays. And Calvin Dinkins looks the best he's ever looked in his career, and you'd expect that, right? He's been here, you know, going in his fourth year. He looks great. And that's another guy, too. Kind of get out there and play with a flat back and move people around. But, you know, a lot of this is going to depend on, you know, the guys that we brought in. You know, there is – we didn't have any depth, as you guys are well aware. And once Will Whitson went down, we were a different club. And that's – nobody can say otherwise. And as I've talked before, you know, we had we got exposed in that Arizona State game in the second half. The difference was – is that we didn't play a lot of teams that could exploit that weakness until we got to the back half of the season. And I think that's one of those things that you kind of have to look at and be mindful of, is you have Will Whitson back. And so, you know, that's a great thing. Then you get Jason Jenkins from Florida State. He's got, you know, 32 games under his belt, you know, largely as a reserve, but, you know, he's going to factor in too. And, you know, it's so interesting, too, like Gus Cordova, you know, hadn't played a whole lot, but man, the guy looks the part. Now, we'll see what he does. I'm told that he's exactly the kind of guy Arnett wants. You know, he's kind of like that guy's got a little bit of a screw loose. You know what I mean? Like, he's just that guy that loves the game of football and he'll run through a brick wall for you. You love that aspect of it, right? And, but Daywon Evans, that's the guy, you know, fills out the uniform, looks great walking around out there, but he just hadn't played. And again, he was highly recruited. And so, you know, he's the guy, too, that needs to do something. And, of course, you know, we've talked about Amari Williams multiple times. Not a ton of production, but a guy, obviously, that has a ton of potential. And so, hey, we got some guys coming back. They're going to have to factor in. And we got some guys coming in. They're going to have to factor in. But the reality of it is we're not so overly reliant on the portal guys to have to come in and start. Some of them may. But we've got enough pieces with Trevion back and Dink back and DeSamoy back and others that it's a good mix. And that's one of the things that we have talked about in recent years. You know, we want to use the portal to supplement. We don't want to be reliant on the portal to be able to fill the team that can compete. Right? You want to bring in competition, fill out your two deep, and maybe if you get a good enough player, he can win a starting job. You don't want to have to go to the portal and say, I got to go find a starter here. You'd love to have somebody with starting potential, but you don't want to have to depend on that to fill out your roster. 2 years ago, that was absolutely the case. It wasn't so much the case last year, but it was still a factor. It's not as big a deal this time because, again, we have had some good retention within that group. And I think Ty Warren's done a good job. I mean, like you talk to the guys, it's clear that he has their respect. And we talk about the Super Bowl rings and things like that. Guys, he doesn't like hi-hat anybody. And like watching him, like one of the things that impressed me about him, like this summer at the prospect camps, guys, there'll be kids in there that got no business at a prospect camp. And listen, it may be their dream to get discovered, but a lot of these kids come just to get coached by, it's not just to get on a recruiting radar. A lot of these guys come to sharpen a saw. They come to learn. It's like, hey, coach, I want to be a better high school player. And, of course, every high school player dreams of playing in college. But, guys, Ty Warren coached all those guys the same. It reminded me of, like, when J.B. Grimes was here on the offensive line. The guys, those 5'8 centers from 1A football got the same workout and the same level of attention from J.B. Grimes that Derek Sherrod did. And that's what I see in Ty Warren. It's a love and respect for the game. It's a love and respect for other players. Even guys that aren't going to play here. You don't want anybody to come to your camp and then go home and tell everybody, don't go to Mississippi State's camp because if you're not a prospect, they're not going to pay any attention to you. Ty Warren treats those guys with respect. And I find myself kind of gravitating at prospect camps when we go in Palmero, not just to get AC, but to kind of go see the cows moving, man. Go see the O-line, D-line guys, as well as the skill guys. And I've always been impressed with the level of respect that Ty Warren shows those guys. Even those guys, like I can look at them and tell, this guy's never going to be a prospect. Well, Ty Warren doesn't make them feel lesser than. That says a lot about a coach, right? This kid paid his money to come to camp to get some instruction. I'm going to give it to him. Whether he ever plays for Mississippi State or not, he may just sit in the stands one day and cheer for the Bulldogs. Or maybe the guy's just coming in here to get some skill refinement because he wants to go help his team win a district championship. Man, you love that, right? And you wouldn't know that if I didn't tell you that. But I have been impressed with Ty Warren since the moment that I met him. And again, he's got some, some weapons to work with that maybe we hadn't had the last couple of years. And I think we did a good job, but, you know, we'll see how good a job we did once we, get on the field against the real opponent. But if you ask me, is the defense going to be better? I'm going to tell you, absolutely, it's going to be better. Because schematically, it's going to be a lot better. At Mississippi State, you got to be a little bit different. And I think that was, again, and I'm going to say this because we've all known it and thought it and have said it. The most important hire that an offensive-minded coach makes is his defensive coordinator. And we made a mistake. We did. And we listen, the first year, you say, hey, we should have done it then. You know, I'm okay giving a guy a second year because we didn't have any players, right? But my thinking behind that is when you've got a guy that is like, guys, if I'm coaching Alabama, I can kind of just run a Bates defense and let, you know, my Mike linebacker just call the checks, right? And they'll make me look great, right? And so, but at Mississippi State, when you're going through a coaching change and a flip of the roster, you better be able to coach those guys because a lot of those guys, number one, don't have the foundational standards that you had at Alabama or Texas. And so we made a mistake, and then after year two, we correct the mistake. And some would say, well, Steve, just imagine where we'd be if we'd done this a year ago. I don't know if we hired Zach Arnett a year ago. I think at the end of the day, this marriage between Levy and Arnett is going to prove to be a great thing because there's two things that I'll say. I think Levy wants somebody to be autonomous on defense. He'll offer some feedback, but he wants the defensive coaches to run the defense. I think Levy has had to focus more energy on defense the last 2 years than he probably should have. He did it because he's a head coach, right? It all comes down to him. But I think with Arnett's pedigree and the fact that Arnett just kind of has that take charge mentality, I think it's going to allow Levy to be a little more innovative on offense because he can focus more energy there, if that makes sense. And again, I love scratch and dent people. I love them. And so Zach Arnett's kind of went out there and got his nose bloodied a little bit. He's back in the ring, baby. You know, I love that. I love people that maybe feel like they got something to prove. And Zach will say, it's not about me, it's about these players. And that's what he should say, but it's not. It's not. The players are going to make plays, but it's going to be Zach Arnett's scheme and system and play calling in conjunction with the rest of his staff. They're going to be the difference in this season, one way or another. We're going to be as good as our defense lets us be. Our offense is going to benefit by getting a couple more stops a game that we couldn't get, especially in the second half. I mean, how many times, especially, you know, what we expect to be an improved offensive line and certainly a good running game, you know, to finish games? Right? How many times last year did we need to just put a drive together? Just get a couple of first downs and just flip the field to win a game, and we couldn't get it done, you know. And so there's just a lot of that complimentary football that Jeff Levy talks about, that if the defense performs up to expectations, I think that's exactly what you're going to get. All right, time for today's top 10 list, brought to you by closewithblair.com. That's C-L-O-S-E with Blair, B-L-A-I-R.com. Blair Chandler is my friend, your friend, our collective friend in the mortgage industry. Man, we love Blair. We love Blair because he's there when we need him. Now, his phone number is 601-500-2344. 601-500-2344. I've committed that number to memory. You may not be able to do that, so save it in your phone as Mortgage Guy. You may forget the name, you won't forget the need, and when you need him, you'll already have the number to call. There are so many opportunities in life to plant some roots, build some generational wealth, make those opportunities mean the most for you, and get yourself in a great deal and get in a great home and let Blair Chandler help you do that. 25 years of experience in this meat grinder of an industry, he can get you to the closing table when so many others can't. So be sure and hit him up. Whether it's your first home, your next home, your retirement home, perhaps that game day condo you so coveted, Blair Chandler, the only name to know. Blair Chandler, closewithblair.com. Okay. Old Dog Jay sent us a request about, you know, kind of a macabre list, I guess, but bands that ultimately ended, even though some of them kind of continued, it was never truly the same. And so we ran that, and I said, you know what, Roy, we could make two lists out of this for Jay, and we have. How about bands that did continue and found some measure of success after the death of a key member? And they're all key, right? This is not as simple a list to put together as you might think. And some of these bands you're going to think, oh, I never knew, right? So we'll start with one of those, number 10. And one of the reasons they're 10 is because of the fact they had a tremendous amount of success after the death of guitarist Brian Jones. We're talking Rolling Stones. Shortly after Jones' death, Honky Tonk Women was all over the rock charts. That's your number 10 track. Number 9, The Smashing Pumpkins. And you're like, Steve, I didn't know. Well, yeah, it's true. And a lot of you remember, you know, Jimmy Chamberlain getting fired. You know, Jimmy Chamberlain was the guy that that made the phone call when there was a death in the Smashing Pumpkins family, as you guys may have forgotten. Keyboard Jonathan Melvoin passed away due to a heroin overdose, kind of right in the peak of all of this. And we're going to go with the Everlasting Glaze that went number 4 on the Billboard Modern Rock charts a few years later in 2000. And it's probably a track you don't know well. All right, number 8 on your list. It's Stone Temple Pilots. Of course, Scott Weiland, obviously legendary singer. You guys well aware of everything that happened with them. And then, of course, Chester Bennington was part of the band for a while. Jeff Gutt, who was on the X Factor, ended up being the lead singer. I had a chance to see STP at Rocklahoma. Thanks, Mark. With Jeff up there. And Meadow was like kind of a return. That's back 8 years ago. And it reached number 6 on the Billboard mainstream chart, Meadow from STP. All right, number 7. And then one could make an argument, Steve, like, and Roy said, Steve, this band's not really a rock band. Well, they were before they kind of went adult contemporary. And so Terry Kath, who was a guitar player and kind of primary songwriter in Chicago, died of an accidental gunshot wound in 1978. And they brought in Donnie Dekus to replace him, and it really kind of changed the identity of the band. They used to be kind of this kind of a jazz rock type thing, and all of a sudden they became more polished pop. But Alive Again, ironically, was like the next big hit from Chicago. Went to number 14 on a Billboard Hot 100. Back in 78. That's your number 7 track. Number 6, and you would say this list must be power-packed if this band is at number 6. We're talking Linkin Park, obviously, with Chester Bennington passing away. A lot of people thought Linkin Park was done. They bring in Emily, and I think she did a great job. I think the album is great from start to finish. And I think some people were like, dude, it's just not the same without Chester. And you're right. It's not the same without Chester, but it's still really good. So we're going to go at number 6, Linkin Park's The Emptiness Machine, which was the first single on the first album without Chester. And the thing that I pointed out even way back then, when we did a top 10 list of that album, is there are a lot of young people today that are getting turned on to the music of Chester Bennington and Linkin Park for the first time. And sometimes we forget that aspect. We know how much that music meant to us, like how Hybrid Theory made us feel. It's like, dude, this is so fresh. What is this, right? There are a lot of people, a lot of young people today that have been exposed to the new version of Linkin Park, and now they're going back and discovering the catalog of the classic version of Linkin Park. All right, number 5. I toyed with this one a little bit just because this band has gone on to kind of superstardom after the death of Cliff Burton. And so I don't think they became a better band after Cliff, even though I thought Jason Newsted did some good things. Of course, he made the move over from Flotsam and Jetsam. I guess he was on the Death Before Dishonor album with Flotsam and Jetsam and then joined Metallica. And so we're going to go with one from Metallica off And Justice for All. But my favorite Metallica albums are the ones with Cliff, but they hit the stratosphere in later years. And so I kind of bargained with myself, and I said, you know what? I'm going to put Metallica there. Number 4 on the list, and again, this is one I had to bargain with. One of my favorite bands of all time, And again, we saw him on MTV right in the middle of the hairband era and thought, well, this is kind of interesting. We're talking Alice in Chains. And I'm a firm believer that Alice in Chains is not the same band without Layne Staley. They've had some good tracks. It's not the same, though. And, you know, when Black Gives Way to Blue, that's a great album. The Dinosaurs album, Eden, is great to me. But the song that really kind of said, hey, maybe this is going to be okay, was Check My Brain. And, I mean, it's very Jerry Cantrell-ish in the riff. And Jerry wrote a lot of the lyrics, despite what some people think. It wasn't all Layne. A lot of times Layne was singing Jerry's pain. So, yes, Alice in Chains has continued on. In my estimation, they'll never reach the heights they had with Layne Staley, who's one of the greatest singers of my generation. But, but give those guys a little credit, you know. Number three. Now, one could make an argument this band maybe should be higher because of their impact and the fact they've overcome not one but two tragedies. The first, of course, after the Pyromania album, Rick Allen has a car accident and loses his arm and then learns to play drums, one arm and all these pedals, and then Hysteria becomes a worldwide sensation. That in and of itself would be pretty cool. And then, of course, there is the death of Steve Clark, who, as great as Phil Collin is, I think Phil was even better kind of working on the bed that Steve Clark laid. And Vivian Campbell, of course, from Dio and spent some time with Whitesnake, became the replacement of Steve Clark, and Viv has done such a great job. So for number three, we're going to go with Let's Get Rocked. Great track. Number two, many of you would have this number one, and I could understand that. And I'll tell you why I have them number two. It's because I think Brian Johnson's a better singer than Bon Scott. And I know that's sacrilege to some people. I love the Bon Scott stuff too. I love it. But Brian Johnson with that grit, of course, it's a lot different these days. But Brian Johnson on that Back in Black album, it's one of the greatest rock and roll albums of all time. And then they continued to kind of build upon that, right? So because of that, I honestly think most of you, when you think of AC/DC, you think of the Brian Johnson era, okay? And again, that's no disrespect to Bon Scott. He was great. You know, like Long Way to the Top's all great. But we're going to go with Shoot to Thrill at number two, which is my favorite AC/DC song. So the reason that they're number two and not number one is because Ozzy's number one. Ozzy Osbourne lost one of the greatest guitar players in the world, and Randy Rhoads. And then reached a new peak with Jakey Lee as a guitar player. And so when I think of, you know, my Ozzy experience, you know, I jumped on board. I really didn't have anything with Black Sabbath, but all of a sudden, you know, Diary of a Madman comes out. And it was spooky, man. There were a lot of record stores that wouldn't stock the record. And if they did, they put like a sleeve over the cover because they thought it was like satanic. That became a big thing, right? But you lose Randy Rhoads in a tragic plane crash, and that would have wrecked a lot of bands. But instead, Ozzy went on, and again, I think, began to kind of elevate. And you know, I mean, it's so interesting how kind of life works. But we're going to go with the Jakey Lee era. Again, I think the Bark at the Moon Ultimate Sin era is the peak Ozzy years. And some people want to argue with me, and that's fine. It's all a matter of personal preference. But that's my feeling. And so we're going to go Bark at the Moon at number one today. And it's always a great thing. We can profile the music of Ozzy Osbourne. And again, what I think was the peak. You know, we discussed recently, too, that the No More Tears album, he sold 8 million copies. And, of course, that's with Zakk Wylde on guitar. And it's interesting, too. Zakk said years ago in an interview with Guitar Magazine that he was the third luckiest guy in the history of the world. Now, some would say, well, that's probably Randy Rhoads, Jackie Lee, and then Zach Wilde. But if you know Zach Wilde's sense of humor, that's not what he meant at all. When they asked him who were the two other luckiest guys in the world, he said former Vice President Dan Quayle and Pee Wee Herman. There you go. So, there you go. Listen, we appreciate the suggestion, Old Dog Jake. And you asked for one list, you got two. We enjoy doing this. If you would like to contribute to our show and offer a suggestion, we are all ears. Just hit up Roy Samanti, my friend, at Dogmatic67, and he'll get you guys lined up. If you tag me, I'll probably see it, but I can't guarantee you that. But Roy always will. And you never know. We've got some on deck, but you may give us a greater idea. And we may move you to the top of the list. And I've had a suggestion here recently. Somebody's kind of putting their own list together, and I will audit that, about songs that appear in movies. Like, once you hear the song, you know exactly what movie we're talking about, right? And I think that's an interesting topic. And so that may be your Friday top 10. We'll see how things kind of progress. But yeah, I mean, I enjoy interacting with you folks and talking a little music, and we appreciate your contributions to the show. You can find Roy on X and Spotify under the handle Dogmatic67. That's DawgMatic67. It's okay to follow him and hit subscribe on Spotify. Our great list will show up for you. Matter of fact, today's list already on Spotify. Roy on top of the game right now, and you can find me on all forms of social media at Scout Steve R. All right, next segment of the show brought to you by Campus Bookmart, a Stark Billion institution. Man, we love Campus Bookmart, and why? Well, they got the things we want, right? It's simply that simple. We, as Mississippi State people, whether we admit it or not publicly, we want more Mississippi State merchandise. We want more T-shirts. We want more button-ups. We want more polos. We want jackets. We want hats. Ladies want those things too. They do. We love wearing the Bulldog brand, and the best selection of Mississippi State merchandise can be found at Campus Bookmart. Next time you're in town, stop by and see them. Just turn off 182 right there at the Trooper Station. We encourage you to obey the posted speed limit signs. And then mosey your way on around towards campus. And right there on the left, before you get to campus, there's Campus Bookmart. You walk in there and then wear your new wares to one of Mississippi State's historic venues. If you can't make it to town, or perhaps game day is a difficult shopping day for you, you can still support a Starkville business, which is always a great thing. Visit them on the World Wide Web at campusbookmart.net. And by being a loyal Boneyard listener, we'll give you a phrase that pays, and that is BSR, which stands for Beautiful Steve Robertson. That gets you free shipping on all orders over $75. Any order less than 75 bones, absolutely incomplete. All right, the latest on the Jerron Manning and Malik Sela saga. Since we have been together, NCAA's made a statement, and it's one of those deals, too, where they, the U.S. Court of Appeals for the 10th Circuit has basically put together an expedited briefing schedule, even though this isn't going quite the way that they said it would. You know, the timeline for this stuff is always longer than they suggest. So, The 10th Circuit is saying, okay, look, here's the deal. Here's the deal. On the 14th, which will be, Friday? Yeah, Friday. The Wisney plaintiffs have to file their response to the emergency motion that the NCAA filed. Of course, that was a simultaneous motion. They had asked for a stay in Charlotte Sweeney's court, and they've also filed the appeal. So it's kind of like they were just getting ahead of the game. So the Wisney plaintiffs have until the 14th. And again, there's some inconsistencies in the logic. in some of the latest briefings from the WISNI plaintiffs. Like, they contend that the NCAA could just relax the roster size, which is not true, because as basically defendants in a house settlement, that's now a matter of law. Once the WISNI plaintiffs file their response, and you know pretty much what's going to be, you may not know the legalese, but you know the premise of the argument, then the NCAA has until the 17th to respond in its final response. As for now, the injunction still stands, and so you're seeing a lot of these state courts get kind of overrun on the docket all around the country as people are trying to position themselves to play. We've got many men's basketball players that are like making commitments. I say many. We've had some. Even though there's not a portal, which of course that then becomes a situation where the ghost portal rules, that's one of the worries of many. It's like if we take a transfer that doesn't go through the portal, there are some pretty serious rules that are in place. And some state courts are saying, no, these rules don't apply. So what's interesting about this, there was a statement, and sometimes a lot of our fans, not just Mississippi State fans, but fans of college athletics, you see the NCAA almost like the federal government, right? You think, well, this people up there in an ivory tower, and they're making these decisions and expecting everybody else to have to live with them. So here is a quote from the NCAA chief legal officer, attorney Scott Burby. Burby says, the Division I cabinet, including its student athlete members, carefully considered whether to make the age-based eligibility rule apply retroactively, and decided that doing so would not be in the interest of all current and future college athletes. We stand behind and will continue to fully defend the membership's decision. The injunction should never have been granted, and we have asked the 10th Circuit to permanently reverse it. So there's a couple things to unpack there. Again, the membership is schools like Mississippi State and Monmouth and Texas A&M and Florida A&M and Alabama A&M, right? It's the league presidents that kind of like vote in blocks based on their conference affiliations and things like that. But the NCAA leadership is acting on the behest of the NCAA member institutions. And as he mentioned in this Division I cabinet, and maybe that's an interesting topic for us to look up too. Like, who is on, let's just do it now. Who is on the NCAA Division I cabinet? As you guys know, it's just like we talked about, you know, the College Baseball Committee. It's not the NCAA as a whole that makes those decisions. It's the various athletic directors. And, of course, our SEC representation is Scott Strickland for now. So the way the D1 committee works is so there are basically representation of 8 what is considered autonomy conferences, and then 2 non-autonomy conferences, 3 from the FCS, and 3 more from the other Division I subdivision conferences. Then there is a faculty representation and 3 student-athlete representatives. And so right now, you've got Alan Green from Pitt, who is representing the ACC, and you got John Steinbrecher from the MAC. That's just a couple names throughout there. So it's important to understand this, again, is not some executive committee made up of just bureaucrats in Indianapolis. This Division I committee is made up of athletic directors like Zach Selman. He's not on the committee, but it's people that are similarly situated. And then again, you've got a faculty rep and you've got 3 student reps. So it's not like they're trying to just kind of ram this down your throat. This is stuff that is being voted on upon by the membership itself. Now, what's interesting is Charlotte Sweeney made in her more recent ruling, and she kind of puts us back in the lap of the NCAA. She goes, in this case, the record showed and continues to show, as explained below, that the NCAA is in a bind of its own making. In other words, its own business judgment gave rise not only to the court's findings that plaintiffs had shown that they were likely to succeed on the merits of the Sherman Act claim, but also gave rise to exactly the chaos about which the NCAA now complains. At bottom, the NCAA made its own choice when it comes to its own consequences. End of quote. Those are big words there. And so basically, the opinion of the court, and again, she made this ruling, and again, I'm basing this off prior research. Like, there wasn't testimony. It was just some briefs filed, and then she ruled, right? They didn't have a hearing. There was not expert testimony. There was not anybody, you know, under a, you know, sworn oath to have to speak. And so that's one of the criticisms of the motion itself, is that we always talk about due process. And listen, there are some cases out there that really don't require a lot of testimony and expert commentary and things of that nature. And it appears that Judge Charlotte Sweeney, that was her take on this. It's like, hey, I have read and seen enough where I can make a decision that basically impacts hundreds, if not thousands, of student athletes around the country. And as I have tried to point out many times, I'm going to get to some other things that kind of illustrate this point. It's not just the student athletes that are impacted. It's the next group. And I don't mean the ones that graduated or began their careers in 23 and 24. I'm talking about the high school players, the ones that have not had their opportunity to play NCAA sports. I mean, they're good enough, right? But because of this ruling, there are going to be some unintended consequences, and there are going to be some other people who were aggrieved, shall we say. Which kind of leads me to baseball. And I wrote some things up earlier today about baseball, and there's a couple of factors here that maybe don't impact the Mississippi State roster for 2027, but it could impact our recruiting class for 2027 and 2028. And what I mean by that is you're going to have 5 years to play college baseball. You used to have four, and the best of the best went pro after year three. And in some cases, you know, you had some draft-eligible sophomores like David Mershon and Dakota Jordan that elected to sign two. But you're going to have more players with more leverage, which likely means they stay in college that much longer. Not everybody, but there's going to be some. And so for every guy that gets to stay the full 5 years, and there'll be some of those guys, and even some of those that stay 4 years, there's going to be another student athlete that doesn't get to come. When you think about the Mississippi State football roster, on paper, there's a good chance State only loses one, maybe two players that's expected to have an immediate impact on this offense. And you say, but Steve, I never considered that. Well, most people haven't. And so this particular ruling, obviously, it's just kind of a temporary thing, right? If this ruling stands, it's a one-year deal, right? That's over with. It's not like those that graduated last year and exhausted their 4 years of eligibility, they're only going to get the 1 year. And I think that's important to understand. But while I think this 5 for 5 is a great thing, it is going to change the recruiting aspect of things for a couple of years, I think. That's my personal opinion. It's because of the fact guys are going to stay longer. You know, on the football side, there's not as many guys that go pro early like there are on the baseball side. And I've got the football roster pulled up here. I don't even know if the 2026 roster is fully available yet. Yeah, it looks like it is. So let's sort this by class, shall we say? And so, again, you know, the age eligibility model matters. You know, like a guy like Jahrae Bledsoe, you know, he's in his fifth season. You know, so he may not be a guy that is a factor in this thing because, you know, he redshirted in 2022. You know, so he may be a guy that doesn't get to hang around. And hopefully he has a big year this year and it doesn't matter. But, you know, here are your guys, like, that will move on. Jahrae Bledsoe, Cannon Boone, Calvin Dinkins is in his fifth year, but I would suspect we could probably get him a medical hardship waiver. That's my feeling. You know, you get season and injuries and back-to-back season openers, that probably qualifies. Trevion Williams, A.J. Swan, Jordan Gilbert's in his sixth year, so he'll be done. Kendall Dolby as well, Marcus Williams. And then, you know, you get into, like, these freshmen. But, you know, when you begin to kind of think about what this offense looks like, and we're going to break that. Cannon's a guy, obviously, that'll move on. But when you get a little deeper into this thing and you start thinking about, okay, well, obviously, Camario is going to be a sophomore this year. So you'd expect him to be back next year. And then you start thinking about, well, Fluff, right? Well, Fluff's played 2 years. He'll be a junior, but he will have the opportunity for the fifth year. Does he go pro? Does he elect to go pro early? And that kind of remains to be seen. So again, on paper, he has the opportunity to come back and have some leverage. It's a little different in football than it is in baseball, right? Because you're not negotiating the signing bonus like you are then. But again, you start running the thing down, like even Anthony Evans, right? Guys, Anthony has 2 years left. So if he doesn't get good feedback this year, well, he can come back. You know, Sam West, multiple years left. Right? You start looking at this offensive line, my goodness, right? L.J. Prudhomme, Jalen Matthews, Mario Nash, Tyler Miller, they're all redshirt freshmen. And so those are some guys, obviously, that have the opportunity to hang around for a while. You know, T.J. Lockhart, redshirt sophomore. San Francisco McGee, redshirt sophomore. Multiple years left, right? And so I say that because I think it's important to understand high school recruiting had already taken a bit of a back burner. But I think for the next couple of years, many schools are going to sign even smaller classes, because they're going to have more players staying longer and electing to take advantage of that fifth year of eligibility. Listen, most guys aren't going to have a chance to go pro. And if you're one of those guys and you're a, quote, senior, you're a fourth-year senior, and you don't get good feedback from the NFL, well, you can bet on yourself. And say, you know what, I'm going to go back for another year, and maybe with another year I can show these guys what I can do, rather than just go sign an undrafted free agent deal. And so the retention on the roster, especially this year and next year, is going to absolutely have a direct impact on your high school recruiting. And you ask yourself, you know, how many high school recruits in recent years have come in and just, you know, set the world on fire? We know Camario is one, and we feel really good about Braylon Womack. We've got some young receivers that we think have an opportunity to play. And you begin to think about, you know, the prospects of having a guy like Camden Capehart for 5 years. You know, and you got, you know, Reagan's, he's got multiple years left. And so I kind of teased this in the bones the other day. I think outside of the offensive lineman, unless you find like a real difference maker on offense, I don't know if you take any more players from the high school ranks this year on offense. Certainly some big-time defenders out there if you can get them. But I suspect this, again, this is just my opinion. I think come November, you're going to see a tremendous amount of, quote, decommitments of high school players. And they're not going to be true decommitments. They're going to be schools that then have a handle on what their existing players are going to do for 2027. And they're not going to trade out a veteran guy for a freshman guy who is not going to be an impact player in 2027. Which I believe will give Mississippi State the opportunity to pick up some players. But I don't think it's going to be the free-for-all that maybe you may expect. Because of the fact that, you know, while we have an older roster, we are in a situation right now where you could conceivably have 10 of 11 starters back on offense in 2027. Cannon Boone being the exception. And I don't know that a lot of people are talking about that. And maybe, you know, what that means for next year, but also, too, what that means for recruiting this year. Then, of course, you know, the next year you have some guys that will kind of work their way out. But on paper right now, Mississippi State has the ability to bring back almost everybody on offense. And we're not alone in that. There are going to be a lot of other teams that have that ability, too, because of this 5-for-5. And so I don't know if people fully appreciate the trickle-down effect all the way down to the high school guys, because it will be the high school guys that that get impacted. And it'll also probably lead to more of these, you know, first and second-year players that maybe are not developing at the rate that you want. So you begin to process those guys out to make room for the next crop of high school recruits. And so I think with like smaller schools, when you've got guys that played their way up, and it's like, hey, with this fifth year, I want to go spend it in a Power Four somewhere. I think you'll see a lot of that. But I think you're going to see a lot of younger players hit the portal because they have figured out the chances of them playing at their current school are not good, and their coaching staff has figured out the chances of those guys being impact players within that program are not good. So it's just kind of a rinse and repeat. We'll just process these guys out and bring in some more high school guys, and you know, hopefully our hit rate is a little bit better there. And so, again, the roster management piece is changing, and so much of this now has been decided by the NCAA and the court system that will put many players in a position they never expected to be. And by the same token, a lot of younger players are going to be having some conversations they never thought they'd have, because schools are going to have to make some room for high school players. And they're going to have to make room for some guys that perhaps are a little more talented. Everybody develops at a different rate. And I think the pressure is on young guys. Even if you're a scout team guy in year one and you're redshirting, you know, of course, that's no longer going to be a thing. But in year one, you got to go out there if you're a scout team guy and you got to bust your tail. Because if you don't, if you just say, well, I'm not going to play this year, so I'm going to kind of dial it back a little bit, you'll be at somewhere else next year. Because there's a high school guy out there, because these high school spots are going to become even more precious for a short time. And they're going to be like, hey, coach, I'll go in there and take care of that. You know, I'm happy to go do that. You know, and so, again, I think it's important to kind of understand not just what this 5-for-5 means for your seniors, but what it means for your underclassmen and ultimately your high school recruiting aspect of things. I think that's incredible, and that's in every sport. You know, on the football side, obviously, we're going to return a lot because of this new rule, not necessarily a new ruling. People forget the NCAA had already implemented the 5-for-5, which is what led to the Wisney lawsuit, because it excluded that one particular class. But it's going to require some adjustment while we cycle through this the first couple of years. And so if you're a high school recruit out there, or you're someone connected to a high school recruit, the biggest piece of advice that I would give is do not play recruiting games. Because there's hundreds of other players that will not do that. But if you want to get out there and be cute and be silly, people just aren't going to deal with you because they don't have to. Because there's going to be fewer high school spots available on rosters. They're going to be like, hey, I don't want this kid. If he's going to cause this drama as a recruit, we'll just move on. You don't get enough juice for the squeeze. So if you're connected to somebody like that, you should say, hey, dude, you need to find somewhere you like, and you need to make a commitment, and you need to stick with it. Because if you start getting cute and thinking, hey, my senior year is coming up, I'm going to bet on myself and decommit and hoping that I can play my way into some Power 5 offers like Cooper Crosby did, you need to understand you may not be Cooper Crosby. And rather than have the opportunity to go somewhere of your choosing, you may have to go somewhere of somebody else's choosing. So that's important information for everybody involved in the process. All right, final segment of the show brought to you by the Stark Vegas Clubhouse, the best place to stay in the Golden Triangle, bar none, especially when you're bringing a large group to town, and you should. No ifs, ands, or buts about it, man. It's a great place to stay. We've stayed there. We had an absolute ball. Just 5 minutes away from the Mississippi State campus. So if you're staying during a ballgame weekend, it's so incredibly convenient. You can get over there to campus, go enjoy your ball game, and then get back. And in fact, it's so close, you can do your tailgating right there instead of lugging all that stuff to campus, man. It's a cool thing. But it's open 365 days a year, not just ballgame weekends. And so if you're looking for a nice place to maybe take a retreat to, this is it. Google the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. When you do, their Facebook page will auto-populate. You can check out pictures of all the amenities available to you and your guests, and the pictures don't do them justice. But it's the full-service kitchen, the wet bar, the back porch area, the fire pit area, six bedrooms, two, soon to be three baths, and plenty of parking. It's the old renovated country club clubhouse out past the Highlands. Very easy to get to, very quiet. Be a great place for you to just kind of reconnect with the people you love the most. And when you do that Google search, you're going to have some booking options pop up. You can go with Airbnb or Vrbo if you want, or you can book through the Evolve website by using promo code BSR10 and get 10% off your stay. That's beautiful Steve Robertson, and then a number 10, BSR10, to get 10% off your stay just by listening to this show. How about that? All right. Couple things here in our potpourri segment. Mississippi State Soccer got the regular season underway with a 3-0 win over South Alabama. It was freshman Katie Ann Shepherd. Took advantage of an early defensive miscue there on the back line and then flushed it home. Makes it 1-0, and that's the only scoring in the first half. And then in the 79th minute, Haley Johnson with an assist from Reese Black and Ashley Tutis. Basically puts this thing away 2-0, and then State one more for good measure. Regan Morris with a goal there in the 89th minute just before the end of regulation to make it 3-0. So Bulldogs now 1-0, and of course it's a new era, Mississippi State, and had a couple of exhibitions. One went okay, one didn't, right? And Memphis, a great team. And they got us, and then, of course, we bounced back to beat out Southeastern Louisiana. But those are exhibitions. Ladies, back in action on Sunday at University of Alabama at Birmingham. And then on Thursday, August 20th, back home at the Mississippi State Soccer Complex against Arkansas State. That'll be a homestand that'll run for a little while because we'll rattle off several games before we get into Southeastern Conference play. I got to open up SEC play on 9/11 in Oxford. And so hopefully the ladies will be undefeated by then. Oklahoma State may be the most difficult challenger of the non-conference, and that'll take place on August 27th. And so, it's a fun sport. It's a lot of fun to go out to the MSU soccer complex because admission is free. You can bring your lawn chairs. You can bring your blankets. You can bring your pets. And it's a lot of fun. It truly is. Even if you don't know a lot about the game of soccer, it's a lot of fun to go. And it's a lot of fun to cover. And congratulations to first-year Bulldog coach Kevin O'Brien for his first win at Mississippi State. Also, it was learned that Madison Ridgeland Academy will retire the jersey of one Josh Hubbard. And why not? Right. And again, you start thinking about the 5 for 5, you wonder, right? Man, Josh Hubbard could put that scoring record so far out of reach that it may never be seen again. But, you know, first things first, we got to go out and play this year. And as you guys know, the season will be here before we know it. We start school next week. Of course, many of your student athletes have already been on campus throughout the summer. Others, you know, like on baseball, kind of back and forth. And now summer is all completely over when it comes to summer ball and summer leagues. But, you know, I'm eager to see what this team looks like. To be honest with you, we just don't know. We just don't know what they're going to look like. But regular season going to open November the 2nd. Be here before you know it, man. And Tennessee Tech here at Starkville. And again, we'll rattle off a handful of non-conference games before we head out to White Sulphur Springs, West Virginia, to play in the Greenbrier tip-off against Xavier. And so still figuring some things out. But, again, congratulations to Hub. You guys know what he's meant to all of us and meant to this program. And, again, there's so many things left. He'll break the scoring record probably midway through the SEC schedule, if not before. And so it's something that we'll be tracking throughout the year and encourage you to kind of come out and do the same, as you can see some Bulldog history as Josh Hubbard does something that no Bulldog's ever done before. I mean, that's the kind of way you get your name up in the rafters. Right. And of course, Hub's a free shooter. But my goodness, man, when he is on, it makes the Bulldogs very difficult to beat. But again, I don't know that anybody really knows what to expect from this team. We've had a huge turnover in the roster, a huge turnover on the coaching side of things. But Chris Jantz did bring in some people, obviously, that, you know, have some connections to him. You know, Corey Barker and Sean Buchanan obviously are guys that have spent some time in the trenches with Chris Jantz. So, you know, we'll have plenty of time to kind of, you know, prepare for that. But I don't expect many will pick Mississippi State in the top half of the league. I think that's probably, you know, fair to say. And, you know, we'll see how things kind of play out. And then, on the women's side, you know, of course, saw Sam Purcell put out that they're going to go put some golf swings together. It is the recruiting shutdown right now. And it's always nice when our coaches get a chance to kind of get away. But, yeah, right out of the gate, man, the ladies are going to play some very interesting teams. And, you know, we don't have the full schedule out here for the non-conference. But, you know, we're going to play some Power Four teams in the non-conference schedule. And we'll be looking forward to kind of seeing kind of what that looks like here in the weeks ahead. But, yeah, it's, you know, the academic year is here, and the athletic calendar will soon follow. And first baseball team meeting is the 17th, and then classes begin on the 19th. And then a couple weeks after that, we're getting ready to play a college football game. And like all of you, I'm enjoying camp. I enjoy kind of being around the guys and kind of hearing about how things are going. But you and I both know, I mean, until you see them on the grass in a real game, you really don't know, you know, kind of how things are going to go. And, you know, Jeff Levy, 2-0 in season openers, you know, destroyed Eastern Kentucky. And they went down there and beat Southern Miss. And that game was not nearly as competitive as some made it out to be, but at halftime we were all kind of sweating it out a little bit. But ultimately, we didn't have to. You know, State really out-athleted them in the second half of that ball game. I suspect that'll be the case against Louisiana Monroe. And of course, you know, that's a program too that's had some ups and downs. But it's year three for that coaching staff as well, and that's one of the things you begin to think about too. I mean, they may be pretty good in their league, and of course they get six home games, and the only Power Four team they're going to play this year is us. So they're thinking they will have a real opportunity to get bowl eligibility, and they have a third-year starter at quarterback in Aiden Armenta. And so, coach said recently, it's the best version. Well, it should be. Right, because of the fact that you know, he's been in the program 3 years, and they've made some changes offensively, but it's all kind of built around him. Looking back at that Southern Miss game, too, I remember how worried so many of you were going into that game. People are like, oh, it's going to be such a tough game. Guys, we just couldn't get out of our own way early in a ball game. It's 10-10 at the break, and then State explodes there in that third quarter and plays about as well as we could possibly play. And it's a 34-10 game going to the fourth quarter. We give that garbage touchdown late to make it look a little more respectable. But, it's just one of those things. And then, of course, you know, we beat Arizona State, and everybody rushed the field. And we felt like, hey, we'd arrived. You know, we're back. You know, and then, of course, once you win those first two, you win on the road. And, of course, there were people chasing ghosts with this Southern Miss thing. And then you get Arizona State. You know you're going to get Alcorn in. You blow out Northern Illinois. So you're 4-0 with Tennessee coming to town. Drop that game. We beat that horse to death. You get smacked on the road at A&M, and we did. But you know, what's interesting, too, you go back and look at that game, and I wrote some articles about this in the offseason. Guys, we were down 7-3 in this game at the half. We just couldn't mount any offense. And, again, that A&M defense was great. They ultimately made the playoff, and as expected. And then, of course, we lose those back-to-back games against Florida and Texas. We know what that happened there. But the thing that I go back to, and I've mentioned this several times. Yeah, I go back to that second half of that Arizona State game. You know, they kind of figured out that, especially with Will Whitson out of the game, that we were going to have a difficult time stopping the run. And we did. We had a very difficult time stopping the run. And I'm pulling some numbers up, too, just because I kind of want to illustrate the point here. So if we can get the numbers here. And maybe we can't get the full box. And it looks like we can't. Oh, yeah, we can. We got it. We got it. We'll get this going here. Let's see here. We're adjusting on the fly, right? But you go back and look at, like, this Arizona State, you know, first half. So their first four drives were punts. And they were in single digits yardage-wise. And then it's an interception, a turnover on downs. Remember, Sam Levitt had that diving attempt at the pylon. And then they kicked that field goal to close the half. And you go back and you begin to look at, you know, they really had no sustained drives. Guys, Whitson comes out of the game with an injury. And then their first drive of the second half is a touchdown, an 8-play, 75-yard drive. And then we get a stop, force a punt. Then it's a 9-play, 49-yard drive, and it ended a touchdown. And then a 17-play drive that ate up 95 yards that ended in a field goal. And the fact that we forced a field goal gave us a chance to win that game. But it's just one of those things. In that second half, you know, they knew Sam Levitt was struggling a little bit. And they were like, you know, guys, we're going to just have to, like, put this ball on the ground. And that's exactly what they did. And, like, when I go back and I look at this very interesting drive here, when they take the lead 20-17, I'm just going to read this back to you because I'm sure many of you have forgotten. Remember that Kanye Udo guy that had transferred in there? I believe from Army. I think that's right. He rips off 11 and then 12. So they get two first downs. Like, they're backed up at the four, right? Because we had a great punt. We downed it at the four-yard line. We think, okay, defense will get a stop. We didn't. So back-to-back double-digit gains. Then we give up two, and then a nine-yard gain, then six, then two, then one, then two. And so, and that two comes on fourth and one. You know, it's do or die for them. Then Malik Brown comes in and gets six, and then two. And then they throw one pass here on third and seven to Jordan Tyson. But it was basically run the whole game. I mean, like, this whole quarter. They just kind of lined up and ran it right at us. And in many respects, we got exposed in that game with our run defense. And what's interesting about that is, okay, so after you lose that game, or excuse me, you win that game, well, you know, Alcorn State couldn't exploit that weakness. Northern Illinois couldn't exploit that weakness. You know, Tennessee could, in some respects. You know, we made some plays against that secondary that were interesting, let's just say. But you go back in here and you look at, you know, again, they ran for 131 yards on 32 attempts. So we did a decent job there, and that's why we were able to stay in the ball game. You know, Texas, you say, well, A&M obviously could run the football, right? We can get to Texas yet. And looking back at this A&M game, you know, again, it's a frustrating game if you're A&M because it's like, hey, it's 7-3 and we just can't put these guys away. Well, you know, then they do, right? And how did they do it? Well, they went to the ground and they ran for 299 yards in that game. We simply couldn't stop the run. We only ran for 77 yards. They run for 300. And you get embarrassed 31-9. In the game, it was 7-3 at the break. And we knew when we got ready to play Florida, they had a couple backs that we had to be very mindful of, right? I mean, you knew that. You knew Jaden Ball was one of the best backs in the Southeastern Conference that nobody was talking about. You know, Katie Daniels, obviously a Mississippi guy, but you knew Lagway could hurt you a little bit. But again, you start working through this, and we got outrushed here 172-144. But the disparity wasn't maybe what it was later. And so, again, you're in the ball game, right? You're absolutely – you've controlled the run. You got outrushed a little bit, but you're still in the game. But ultimately, you lose. You get outrushed. And then I go back to the Texas game, right? We knew going into this game that they were going to struggle to run the football, because that backfield was absolutely beat up. Everybody knew it. C.J. Baxter was going to try to give it a go. He went 9-for-27. Wisner had 41 yards for them as the leading rusher. And so when you go back and look at the totality of this thing, we got outrushed 72-63. And it's a game that we should have won, right? So, again, they were beat up physically and couldn't expose our greatest vulnerability. Well, then we go to Arkansas. And they were a team, too, obviously, that you know, kind of built to be a running team. And you get Bobby Petrino, a guy that still kind of got a burr in his saddle that Mississippi State didn't hire him. Guys, they ran for 239 yards. We ran for 106 and still managed to win the ball game just simply because they were so bad defensively. You get to Georgia, right? Same situation, right? It's just absolutely you want to see a textbook? Just run the football. Guys, Georgia ran for 303 yards. We ran for 149. And then, of course, the debacle up at Columbia, Missouri, when they didn't have a quarterback, guys. And they ran for 326 yards. And then, of course, Ole Miss, you know, hey, you tip your cap. Those guys were pretty good last year. I mean, obviously. And you begin to kind of look at the numbers. You know, we actually outrushed them 262-186. And, again, you look at this thing and you feel like for a while you feel like we're in the game. And we're down 21-10 at the break. But in the second half, we just couldn't get off the field. And so the point that I'm making is defensively, we did make some improvement. But our biggest weakness was exposed in the second half of that Arizona State game. And then we went basically about a month, 3 weeks there, where we didn't play a team that had the personnel to exploit the weakness. Well, then A&M surely did. Florida, to a certain extent, and Texas was beat up. And then you see Arkansas, Georgia, and Missouri, obviously teams that, you know, are kind of based on the ground game, and they got us. And so I'm not going to sit here and say that it was all smoke and mirrors. It wasn't. We did make some improvement because we had greater personnel. But that's the thing that I think with this particular defense, to kind of get back to our original segment, we're going to be a lot saltier against the run. You know, we're going to have these slants and these stunts, and we're going to bring all this pressure and have all these run blitzes, and we're going to have a lot of TFLs. I mean, that's the game plan, right? And so what we need to do is win on second down. We have got to put teams in third and long and third and medium. We can't let teams constantly be in third and one, third and two. And that was the problem last year. You know, we couldn't win on first down. And then, you know, hey, we'd get – how many times did you see it? We'd get in a third and short and couldn't get out the field. And it was much worse in 2024. Our third down conversion rate defensively was absolutely awful. And so, again, when you think about schematically what Zach Arnett wants to do and how he can put you in a situation where, you know, you can do a pretty good job against the run, and it is a very linebacker-friendly defense – you know, that's where the greatest change in our program has to come. Yes, defensively, but more importantly, stopping the run. There's not a lot of risk just handing the ball off. You know, it's like they say when you throw the football, there's, you know, there's three things that can happen, and you know, two out of those three are bad, right? They can catch a football, or you can catch a football, or it falls incomplete. But short of somebody fumbling the football, there's not a lot of risk involved. And we showed last year there was a lot of reward. And so when I think about, you know, what made those Arnett defenses really good under Mike Leach is our ability to go out there and win early in ball games and make teams a little more predictable. And so I just kind of wanted to revisit that, and just because I've had some people that have said, you know, Steve, you said that a few times about the Arizona State thing. I don't know that I've ever expounded on it on the show like we did today. And so I think that's important to understand is that that weakness existed, but in the month of October, and especially in November, we played teams from a personnel standpoint that were kind of built to exploit that weakness. That hopefully won't be the case this year. If you haven't done so, visit DutyNobleBook.com. You get signed copies of all my sports titles and the personal memoir, When the Bottom Falls. Everything ordered through the website is signed. So if you're looking for that special gift, there's a good opportunity for you there. And then come float with us at True West Float Spa of Starkville. You can speak directly to my beautiful wife, Dana, at 662-268-7601. And come join us over at jeanspage.com. As I mentioned before, 60% off the annual subscription price throughout the month of August. And that'll get you all the way through football, basketball, baseball, all in through portal for football and baseball, and gets you right back to the opening days of preseason camp next year. It's a great time to jump on board. Again, 60% off the annual price. And listen, I know that we have some other people that listen to the show that maybe be thinking about others. You know, you could always give the gift of Jeans Page, and what a value that is if you're a Mississippi State fan that lives and breathes Mississippi State. You need to be a member at the most prolific Mississippi State sports media site that has ever existed. How about that? Until next time, let's all live our lives in a way we make more friends and enemies, and people can see a difference in the way we live.